Hola, hola, my name is Ricardo. I am the host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here in the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. We are a Spanish-speaking show dedicated to discussing and analyzing pro wrestling from all across the world. From AEW to CMLL, we talk about American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and of course, Lucha Libre. If something big happened in the pro wrestling world, we will talk about it. So if you know Spanish or have a friend that knows Spanish or want to practice your Lucha Libre pronunciations, go listen to the Lucha Jobbers podcast right here in the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. Nos vemos por ahí.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey there, Thunder Buddies and Travelers Down Thunder Road. It's us, Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder Rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway. Coming to you as part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network and powered by largemanappears.com. I'm your host, your psycho on Thunder Road, Dave Ryan. And I am joined, as ever, by my faithful co-host, Sagar Lee Malone. Lee, how are you?
I suppose I'm here to serve a bit of justice.
Yeah, damn right. One of the I thought about making a theme of the next few months of Days of Thunder being like the four harbingers of the WCW apocalypse.
Okay.
Where we have like imminent signs that we are going like to the apocalypse in my estimation is the arrival of Vince Russo. So in the build up to that, we have the arrival of Tank Abbott,
mm-hmm.
Sid Vicious,
yes,
Shane Douglas.
And Jeffrey Jarrett.
And Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
They're the harbingers of doom.
All very blonde men.
Well, with the exception of Tank.
Well, except, Tank would go on to do some very strange things in WCW.
He certainly would. This is like, as we'll get to it, as hyped as I was for this particular one of the four, I do know it is one of those we are inching ever closer.
On the show.
Two of the four have appeared on this show. I am hyped for the arrival of Sid, but it does we know that we're just in shape.
We're into the Sid Vicious era. This is what we've been waiting for.
We're now inside, I think it's about 3 months WCW time before it all goes to hell in a handbasket. But there were, like, not to burst the bubble and skip to the end straight away, but this is one of those shows where I'm like, if you asked me, was Vince Russo booking at this point?
Yes.
All signs would point to yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a feather in the cap for anybody who accurately points out and doesn't forget their history that, like, this thing was careening off a cliff long before they went to Vincent Russo and Ed Ferrara.
Yeah, it's like one of those things that kind of gets lost in history is that no matter who was in charge, whether you want to say it was Nash, whether you want to say it was Bischoff, so whoever the fuck was booking at this point, things weren't good.
And Great American Bash was a bad show.
Oh, this could be the worst pay-per-view we've done in...
In terms of, like, I was looking at, so what I'm going to do for the pay-per-views going forward is I'm actually going to, like, as we get to the match, I'm going to go through the Observer star rating for it. And just copying and pasting these star ratings into my notes, I'm like, there is one match on this show. It will not surprise you which one. That's 3.5 stars. Mm. That is comfortably the highest rated match on this show. There is one dud and 2 -1-star matches on this.
It's funny, not to bring us straight away to, like, modern wrestling, but just, like, compare that to, like, a current episode of, like, Dynamite.
Yeah. Even like as much as I hate watching the show and I hate the presentation and the company, like I think even a very dull episode of Raw has such a higher base level of in-ring competency.
It's you know what, actually Raw might be a better comparison because they are also 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like the in-ring wrestling would be such a higher standard.
Yeah.
But you don't have that investment that you would have had with the characters.
And this is like, and this is completely the opposite because as we'll talk about, there's some of the stuff that's crazy over on the show and like all that's left in WCW are the people that are super invested in this product. Like, because there is nothing grabbing you in terms of like a story. There's no one to like there's nothing to tune in for. You're going to go, I'm going to see a great piece of professional wrestling TV. You're just at this stage tuning in for your guys and hoping that they're not buried.
Yeah. And quite literally some of them will be buried in the very near future.
Yes, indeed. Speaking of buried, I actually haven't talked to you since the show. So like, do you want to do a whistle stop 30 seconds of your thoughts if you've caught up on AEW Revolution? Because we haven't actually recorded a free show since.
Oh, have you not? Oh, Jesus. I've been fucking one of the best pay-per-view shows of all time, but it's just an amazing show from that point. I didn't watch it till the day after and I kind of avoided pretty much all spoilers and... Mm. I sat through it all in one go and I was just blown away by the in-ring action. I think John Moxley and Hangman Page might be one of the best matches ever.
Mm.
Even like I know MJF and Danielson is getting a ton of praise for probably being the best Iron Man match ever.
Yeah, it was damning with faint praise when you think about the competition.
But I
think it has actually been like, I know you're not as online anymore, but it's been pretty contentious and it seems to entirely come down to your mileage on MJF.
Oh, I mean, he's an asshole, so you can't possibly like,
he's extremely, I don't even say polarizing. It's just like, but polarizing probably is the right word. It's like you don't have a lot of people who are in the middle on him or can take or leave him. Like you have people, like I think we're on the side of like we're really into what he does. Like there's there's some angles or just some lines in promos where just like, ah, oh, that wasn't like that wouldn't have been my choice or anything like that. But like on the whole, I really enjoy the arc he's had in the company. And then you get people who are just like, irregardless, like that man could come out and have the greatest match in the history of professional wrestling. And I think they'd be like, meh.
Yeah, like
he just doesn't do it for some people.
I was gonna say, here's the thing with MJF is that he could go out there and have a Kenta Kobashi style match, and people that like that style of match will still go, but it's MJF.
Yeah, I think like I don't think it's always a conscious and deliberate thing. As with a lot of wrestlers, there are some cases where that is the case. I think some of it is just that there are certain things about him and his kind of like maximalist approach, and everything is big and like for me, because like I like a little bit of everything in my wrestling, and he is a little bit of every, like he is this big huge character. But he also, I think he's turned into a great wrestler, and I think he can do storytelling. He can do all action. He can keep up with most styles now that I've seen. But if you have a particular view of wrestling, there are going to be things about his maximalist approach that really rub you up the wrong way, and that's not going to be something you'll ever reverse on. So I get that.
Well, here's one other thing. Okay, if you want to not give MJF any credit for that match, well, then it's probably the most incredible carry job in the history of wrestling. By Danielson, because I don't care what way you slice it, it was a fucking phenomenal match.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I was, I thought, again, it was like we said in the prediction show, I think that it was one of those shows that the hype levels, I think, for a lot of people were pretty low going in. And it was just another one of those shows where people weren't necessarily hugely excited and it over-delivered dramatically.
100%.
Yeah. One last thing before we get in, just a little programming note as to what we're going to be doing next behind the paywall at alargemanappears.com. The rest of this month is about getting to our TRL requests that have been sitting there. Season two, we've two left on the dock, and we have one that's going to straddle between season two and season three later in the year.
Yeah, we should say we had so many in because we didn't expect people to actually subscribe so quickly to the TRL level.
We were
almost caught off guard.
Well, we launched in June and we're like, oh, maybe someone will have subbed by Christmas, and we already had all six slots filled within a couple of months, and we're like, oh shit, we need to change some stuff around. So we're getting to the last two this month.
Yeah, so up next is a request by Nathan Moore, I believe.
Long-time friend of the show.
Long-time, one of the OG listeners. And his request is a DOT at the movies, and we are going to be covering Rumble in the Bronx.
Yes. I'm really excited about this. It's a movie I have not seen in donkey's years.
Yeah, I would have seen this like once when I was very much a lot younger. Yeah. And one thing Nathan asked in the request was that he asked, had Connor seen it?
Yeah.
And I said no. And he said, oh, well, I'd love, you know, if you were able to sit him down and watch it and get his reactions. Now, I was only thinking about this recently.
Yeah.
That Connor has obviously grown up watching the Marvel movies, and
yes,
how much a part like the action sequences are of those movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder what, like, I will do my damnedest to get him to actually sit down and watch a movie, which is difficult in and of itself.
Yeah.
But I wonder, will he be as blown away coming from where he's coming from in movies as to where we would have been as kids?
I wonder if you give him a job as our official correspondent, would he be more motivated to do it or less because he doesn't want to carry you to another podcast?
Well, I mean, he keeps asking to do the ad read, so that's something.
Yeah, okay. So maybe, like, if he's an enterprising young man, maybe this will be something he would like to do.
And he does keep asking for another appearance, so we'll see.
Look at this. He's got all Hollywood now, demanding appearances.
Well, you know what he's looking for. He wants to defend his draft and drafts.
Funnily enough, I don't think the public love him. I don't think he'd ever lose. Like, he could try to tank one and he'd still probably win over either of us.
I keep putting it out there. Alan Farrell is ducking him, so.
Yeah. Oh, this is great neutral ground for the big dog versus your son. Who is the biggest dog in the yard? That's how we'll market it. So yeah, we have that show, Rumble in the Bronx, and then we're moving on to our good friend, Sue Williams.
Yes.
Shout out, Sue. Who has... You thought last time that we talked about this that we were doing Backlash 08. Oh, were you wrong?
Oh, so wrong. Do you know what? I really need to start writing down what these shows are for.
If anybody can't tell, Lee is the point man on our episode scheduling for TRL.
I need to get better at this.
Yeah. Between this and the Aaron doing the wrong show debacle.
A show that we definitely didn't do twice.
Yeah, I don't know what anyone's talking about.
But yeah, so up after that then will be Backlash 02. And let me tell you, we just looked up the card for that show. It's a doozy.
It is a doozy, my friend. We'll be doing that. And then a good friend of the show, Mark Buckley, Monkey Buckles. Mm-hmm. From the Musty Matches podcast. He has a little bit of a different take on TRL
Wouldn't be like Mark to have a different take on things.
No. So that's going to be his. I've been thinking about maybe making that the debut of season three, or maybe its own standalone episode, because it was originally a season of six episodes for season two. Mm. So it'll either be a kind of mid-season special in a little while, or it'll be like the kickoff to season one. It depends on like if people start queuing up when I reopen the slots straight away, then we'll do Mark sooner rather than later. But we'll see how that goes. Also, I just want to shout out the last one we did. Because the last time we talked on the free shows, we hadn't recorded our last TRL, which was our friend Chris Damasceno's request, which was the WMAC Masters season one, episodes 1 to 3. And I think that's one of the best podcasts we ever recorded.
Definitely one of the most fun. I mean, yeah you'll have to go to patreon.com/WCW Thunderpod to listen to it. But yeah, no, we had an absolute blast talking about the madness that is WMAC Masters.
Yeah. So only €5, you can get a month on there, and you'll catch the two TRLs that are about to come out, the one that has, and somewhere in the region of 30 odd other premium podcasts we've done. Something crazy like that. Like, it's been at least 2 a month, plus all the live streams, plus the solo audios and things like that. Like, it's a hefty amount of audio now at this stage we can stand by as a body of work for the last year. So get on, join us there. And we are very much tempted to continue reviewing WMAC Masters as a Patreon mini series as well. So if you remember WMAC Masters when you were a kid, now is the time to subscribe and show us that you want more WMAC podcasting. You want to see us complete the Dragon Belt and go for the Dragon Star. Right, let's get into it. We've been holding off long enough, this bad, bad show. This is Great American Bash 1999, coming to you from Baltimore, Maryland, 13th of June 1999, 185,000 buys. So, like, you know, by today's standards, absolutely insane. Hmm. But it's not like a top show of the year level of buys. But there's still a fair amount of people willing to whack down hard-earned money for WCW in spite of everything.
I mean, when you consider what the TV shows were probably still getting around, what, 3 million?
Yeah.
So it's like...
Yeah, you're talking...
The conversion right there ain't too good.
You're talking about 2.3 million we've been doing for Thunder lately, but I think Nitro is still up around the 3 million mark. Yeah. So, it's not a great conversion rate, but it's not nothing in terms of buys. Yeah. And especially we're going through a time like where, you know, Scott Hall's not on TV at the moment, Brett's not on TV at the moment, Goldberg is off filming Universal Soldier, which I went online and did confirm. I was like, where has he? Because he literally just dropped off the face of the fucking earth.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's filming Universal Soldier too, and you know what that means?
No.
Yeah, it's on our time. It's on our schedule when it comes out.
I know.
So we're gonna have to watch that. I've never seen it except for that one clip they would always show on
nobody
Nitro.
Has ever seen it.
That one clip of Goldberg spearing into an elevator shaft, I have seen, but other than that, this will be my first. I haven't even seen the original Universal Soldier, which I don't know how sacrilege that is in terms of the 90s action movie canon.
Yeah, I've never seen it, so I'm not gonna give a shit. But then again, I'm not a movie guy, so.
Yeah, I actually do have a little note here that I meant to get to as part of Grab Bag Radio this month. So I kind of said, as a mea culpa, I would answer this last question on the air on a normal podcast. And it comes from a young man named Garrett Kidney.
Oh, no.
And he asked, if you could have Psych Odyssey level detailed fly on the wall documentary. So Psych Odyssey, for the uninitiated, Double Fine, the video game studio, put out a 22 hour long documentary about the making of Psychonauts 2 that they called Psych Odyssey. So it was like followed a 7-year grueling development cycle of one game. So Garrett is asking, if you could have that level of detailed fly on the wall documentary for any period in wrestling history, which would you choose?
Oh, fuck.
Like, I feel like one of the hackneyed answers is like Jim Crocker Promotions, mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
I think you're seeing, think of the shit you're seeing backstage.
Yeah, but it's also the 80s, so think of the shit you're seeing backstage.
Yeah, it's true. Similarly, but stuff you literally couldn't broadcast if all the urban legends are to be believed. ECW from barely legal to shutdown.
God, what would
I would be interested in? Do you know? I would be interested in original brand split era WWE, when like you got all the stories in hindsight about like warring factions of writers and like Paul Heyman sneaking onto conference calls to listen into the plans they had for Raw,
and literally like traveling buddies finding out on the website that they were being separated, and
yeah,
all that kind of stuff,
because those documentaries have like they have interviews with people as they get upset and disenchanted and leave Double Fine. So Jesus, it would be amazing to get people like who are just fucking disgusted at being moved to SmackDown. And
I think a good one would be TNA, say like 3 months before Hogan and Bischoff come in.
Yeah.
And then TNA six, like from 3 months before up until like they leave.
Yeah.
And that whole kind of like, we're in negotiations with Hogan, and then Jarrett's out, and then the Hogan and Bischoff come in, and
it's not quite the same thing, but you know, the last fan are going through the Hogan era of TNA at the moment, in like their usual multi-part, multi-hour shows, and
I'd say that the 2 hour debut has at least a like 6 hour podcast.
I mean, like I think there was 3 parts to the show before Hogan even actually shows up.
Jesus Christ.
You know, they're not men of brevity.
They don't skip on the info. I'll give them that.
Yeah, I do love the Laps fan though. Shout out to the boys. Yeah, I think those are some good suggestions there. If you have one, tweet us at WCW Thunderpod. And you know what? Tag Gary Kidney in it as well. Why don't you? Let him know.
Especially if it's TNA related.
I did love, by the way, that I don't know if you've been following the drama with Garrett this week on the internet. But
drama on the internet.
Garrett got called out by the Deadlock Pod, saying that he was sitting on the footage of El Generico's dark matches in TNA. And I DM'd him. I was like, hey, you got called out, son. And then I think within 2 days, the Impact official account had posted the dark match.
I did see that Garrett posted in the work Slack about some found footage. I mean, this could have been a couple of days ago. I can't say for sure.
No, like the timeline makes it look like Garrett actually was sitting on it and bowed to public pressure. But he does assure me, and I do believe him, that like they had been, because people have been asking for these dark matches for ages and ages.
Yes,
and that like people were actively looking for it, and found it. It's very funny. Very funny.
Also, Garrett, no association with Impact.
None whatsoever. Can't prove it. Cold open for this pay-per-view as a white limo, not a white Hummer, a white limo.
Yeah,
pulls up to the arena. Dillinger, of all people, is the designated, like he's head of security, but of course, part of that entails opening limos for random people. And who should pop out, Lee? Only the No Limit Soldiers and Master P.
So is Master P a part of the No Limit Soldiers, or is he the leader and they are his No Limit Soldiers?
The No Limit Soldiers were always on this show referred to as a collective unit, whereas Master P was referred to independently. So I have a feeling he is the figurehead slash patriarch.
Okay.
Of the No Limit Soldiers. And let me tell you, some interestingly shaped men in this crew.
Yeah.
There is one man who I could not get around any other description than he's shaped like a wedge of cheese.
I know the guy. I know the guy you're talking about.
It's like he has like narrow little legs and a little waist, and the higher he goes up, the wider out he goes. It's an incredibly proportioned man. And as we would find out later, one of these men would get involved and ultimately be a wrestler for a little while at WCW. But he was not that guy. It was another guy in that crew.
He would be the aforementioned, or the previously not mentioned, Swole.
Yes.
Who is, as his name goes, pretty fucking huge.
Yes. Yes, not Big Swole, Huge Swole in this case. And then another man in the crew, I also couldn't get around this, was shaped like a fucking cube. I got
like
nothing else.
Like Dr. Cube.
Yeah, like Dr. Cube, yeah. Hennig meets them outside the limo and he's like freaking out and he's like, he wants them to sign his CD. Master P signs it and Hennig like grabs it and crushes it in his hands. And like they do like a Scooby-Doo style chase him out of the arena.
Well, they bark, yes.
Yeah.
that's something we don't see enough of on wrestling TV anymore, is people crushing things with their hands.
Yeah. We then get, before we even go to the arena, we get a video package. This is how video packagey this show is.
Why are they doing video packages on pay-per-view?
This one is, like, I understood if it was like an absolutely like historically significant thing, you wanted like up the hype a little bit more, but this match has been fucking like this. You really should be showing less of the build to this match because it wasn't good. They show basically all the comedy elements again of this this Nash versus Savage feud that we have not been feeling on this show. You know, the usual, he's out of control, vehicular homicide, throwing slop on somebody. The one line I didn't realize from the throwing the when, you know, the angle where the stealth contortionist threw the rotted stuff on top of Savage, was as Savage had been bringing that bucket to the ring, he lets out the line, "Oh yeah, that's fermented, yeah," which is just an absolutely 5-star Randy Savage line.
Why isn't that one in his classics?
I know, yeah, like that should have been one of his catchphrases. I liked, so the opening shot of the arena was like from the floor tilted up, showing like the top of the ring and the roof of the building, which I thought was a really cool opening shot. And at first glance, I thought the stage looks interesting.
That's what I thought as well. Yeah.
I thought that, I didn't think the signage, like the little signs where it said Bash on either side of it, made it seem like a business conference. But incorporating what was actually the physical stage in the building was cool. And I also like that they have a new Bash logo where they incorporate the new WCW emblem into the star on it. And I thought that was cool. And they keep that for a year or two, I think.
I think they kind of modernize it for next year's one. Like they change it very slightly, but it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
Obviously, because next year will be the final Bash.
Yes, indeed.
But not the Bash, because that's WWE.
Yeah, well, they did do it as the Great American Bash for a little while as well.
They did, but then there was elevated liver enzymes, and that just ruined things.
It's not always the way with the enzymes.
But yeah, no, I really like the setup. Like you said, incorporating the stage into the setup, and it's not often you see that with a wrestling show where they have the steps down to the walkway.
Yeah.
But yeah, not a good looking show. Did you enjoy, once we go to the commentators, Mike Tenay's putting over of Master P as a mogul?
Yeah.
He must have talked for at least 2 minutes about everything that Master P has ever done in his life.
And you know what? Like, even just the list, I was exhausted. He seemed to have been like one of those that was like, and this was a thing in the like the 90s, people felt a particular pressure to be like a crossover star. So he was like, he had his hand in everything. So they were talking about like music, business, films, the whole lot. What did they have anything else in there?
It's just like,
did he own a chain of pretzel wagons,
laundromats, fucking just like everything that the man had ever done? It felt like he insisted as part of whatever this contract he had was
to read out his whole resume.
Every time he was on screen, they had to read out his entire fucking history.
Yeah.
God, it was fucking tiresome.
Like, they did. I did. They should have just left it at like the Tanae's opening line of saying that was that Master P is the most diversified artist of our time, which I thought was like a cool line. Mm-hmm. But then, like, going into the like, you're doing a job interview with the man, listing through his experience, I think, nah. Brain says he's not going to be surprised if Randy Savage walks out tonight as a champion. He's out of control. Have you heard? They do. I like the idea of this, but I think they could have done it a lot quicker, of doing a little video package to run down the whole card. And I think if you do this right, you make it nice and snappy, it should make it redundant for you to have to do any more video package on the show, because this would be the one, and now we can just go to the action. That is not what they did here.
No, they ran down the entire card, and then yeah, later on we will still get more video packages.
In particular, I loved when they did the couple of seconds showing the hardcore match that would be our opener. You hear Tony describe Hack and Brian Knobbs as those two wacky hardcore guys.
Yeah. Tony is still not fully on board with the whole hardcore stuff yet.
Tony is week on week going massively overboard away from this company as quickly as he can, mentally speaking, anyway.
I will say he's still into Chastity, so there's always that.
I will say, who can blame him? but yes, that is also true. Speaking of which, our opening contest, Hardcore Hack with Chastity versus Brian Knobbs. I was not excited for this. And I became rapidly less excited by the time the bell rang. We talked at the opening of the show about how you would swear Vince Russo was already booking this. In between the time the show started and this match started, the stipulation changed twice.
Yeah, it's a candlestick match.
But it wasn't until Penzer said it was.
Okay, so was it a hardcore match initially?
It was just a hardcore match. That's all it's been billed as on TV, or at least on Thunder, shall we say. They might have been fucking wall-to-wall talking Kendo sticks on Nitro, for all we know. But that's the gimmick we got going around here, guys. We just watched Thunder.
Okay, so we came in thinking this was a hardcore match. Then it was announced as a Kendo stick match.
Yeah.
And then Brian Knobbs cuts...
a promo.
I'll kindly say it's a promo. Yeah. Where he fucking screams like it's 1982 down the microphone. Yeah.
A microphone passes his face as he attempts to say words in a particular order.
Actually, can we talk about the fucking state of Brian Knobbs?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, please. Tee off, my friend. Go like, off, it's, King.
It's fucking 1999. The man's out there with a bleach blonde mullet, spiked mullet.
Yeah.
With his fucking nasty boy gear. Hmm. Well, sorry. It's not even nasty boy. It's knockoff nasty boy because it just says nasty. And he's just a fucking, an absolute fucking disgrace to professional wrestling.
Yeah, like, I know it's a thing where, like, it's a running bit that wrestling is, roughly 10 years behind where pop culture actually is. You know, they all still wear Zubas and have fanny packs and stuff like that in current day. However, I feel like even like years ago, Brian Knobbs would still look a state. Do you know what I mean?
Like if even that whole thing of, oh, it's 10 years behind pop culture. These people still have to live outside of TV.
Yeah.
Like they still have to travel places.
How do you walk through life as a Brian Knobbs? And this is a guy who like, he pretty much probably still has this style today. Like I know 10 years later when he's popping
up on TNA. Yeah.
TNA, but also when he's showing up on Hogan Knows Best, like he's just Brian Knobbs. Like all he's missing is, I don't know, and he may have actually appeared on Hogan Knows Best in a Nasty Boys t-shirt for all I know.
I've no doubt that he did.
Yeah.
Actually speaking of Hogan, like we haven't talked about this, but this is very obviously just a favor to Hogan.
Yeah. Oh, that's the other of the list of people that aren't on TV at the moment. Hogan.
Yeah. Well, he's coming back. Don't worry.
Yeah. God damn.
But like, this is very obviously just a get Hogan's boys back on TV. And oh, by the way, they're together.
Yeah.
Because one's his manager and the other is his fucking lackey.
Yeah.
It's just fucking. Like,
all we're missing them is joining a tag team with the Disciple now.
Mm-hmm.
Who is one of the people who is thankfully off TV at the moment.
Don't worry, he'll come back and squash your cruise away.
Oh, you're goddamn right he will. Yeah,
this fucking sucked.
Like, even when they come out to the ring and this is supposed to be a kendo stick match, there are more trash cans in and around the ring at the start of this match than there are kendo sticks.
Oh, actually, sorry, I never mentioned the promo. Knobbs says, let's throw away the sissy sticks or something like this, says.
Don't forget he shouts out his wife.
He does shout out his wife for, I think it's her birthday or something, is it? Yes. Mrs. Nasty.
Yeah. Mrs. Nasty. I'm sure would be extremely thankful not only to be married to Brian Knobbs, but for her to have been referred to on pay-per-view as Mrs. Nasty.
But Knobbs says, let's just have a straight wrestling match. Or sorry, a tape fist match is what he wants.
Yeah. I thought, as you just inferred there, I thought he was suggesting like they would just fucking razzle. And if there's anything I would like to see Brian Knobbs and Hack do less than have a hardcore match, it's grapple.
You don't think 99 Sandman can
have a nice little
grapple with Brian Knobbs?
These two guys under Bloodsport rules.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
You don't see Josh Barnett booking these two?
I don't really see that, no. Well, maybe for the after party.
But obviously, as Tony points out, it's all the first swerve of the night.
Oh, when he said that, like, and the emphasis was on first, as if to go, fucking buckle in, lads. He's seen what's coming up.
Yeah, he's seen the run sheet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tony throws out the first swerve of the night, and Knobbs uses a trash can. But basically, from there, this is just fucking, it's woeful. I don't even have that many notes on the match. Yeah, I just think it's fucking bad.
I don't have too much. You get some really embarrassing stuff, like, the Pity City, which I just hate that. I hate it so much. They've started calling it the Pit Stop now to like modernize it, I guess, but it's still a stupid fucking awful spot. I did laugh at when Hack goes outside the ring and he gets a ladder, he just fucks the ladder into the ring on top of him. That was good stuff. That was maybe the best spot of the match. I just don't understand. This has one of my pet hates of any match that involves a ladder, which is men doing moves on top of the ladder on top of a guy when you could just do it on top of the guy on top of the ladder, and it makes way much more logical sense. So like Hack does the slingshot leg drop on top of the ladder on top of Knobbs, breaks his hole. He closes Knobbs' leg in the ladder and smashes it with a chair. He tries to do a senton but misses and lands on the ladder. Jimmy Hart holds up a chair. Hack knocks Brian Knobbs into Hart, caves his head in with a cane and wins. He was swinging for the fences with that cane shot. I did laugh. I did love Hugh Morris comes out precisely 1 second too late to have an influence on this match, in which I will remind you all, there was no DQs. He could have come out there with the lads at the start. There was nothing stopping him.
Well, I mean, he was obviously going by normal hardcore rules where there just can't be any interference.
Yeah. Big beatdown, no laughing matter, onto the ladder on top of Hack like a fucking idiot. And then Knobbs does a splash onto a trash can, onto a ladder, onto Hack like an even bigger fucking idiot.
And I will say, Knobbs looked like a fucking asshole. Like his little jump off the rope.
Yeah, little belly flop. And somehow, I didn't catch exactly how, in this beatdown, Jimmy Hart got color.
Is that when he went flying off?
It must have been. He was busted open at the bridge of the nose nearly. He fucked himself up there somehow. Shite match. It got, what did it get from the Observer? 1.5 stars.
What? Which
might have been generous.
Hmm.
Then we get Piper having a motivational chat with Buff. So what we are led to believe, this must have been something that played out on Nitro, is that Piper has insisted to Buff Bagwell that if he gains control after the match with Flair of the company, that Buff will get the shot he's been talking about.
Okay, I don't think you're following the story. We saw it on Thunder.
I've suppressed this.
This is part of the old guys versus new blood. Well, I better not call them new blood, because that's something that this is part of the old guys versus new guys thing that they've started.
But Lee, Piper is an old guy.
Yeah, but Piper's not the face here either.
Yeah, no, he's not. We would see much more obviously later on, but as soon as he walks off from Buff, he's just like mumbling under his breath about him, like he doesn't give a shit.
The two of them are being disingenuous towards the other, so it's basically like Buff is like, oh, I can't wait to have this shot on pay-per-view against Disco, who I just beat on Nitro.
So you've remonstrated me for forgetting that detail from Thunder Just Gone, but also, could you blame me?
I know, it's a shit storyline.
It's terrible.
Buff wants his chance, and Piper doesn't want to give him a chance because he's old and wants a spot.
Yeah, whereas I would argue neither of them should get a chance.
Well, I mean, Buff got his chance in 2001 and killed the whole company.
Killed the territory. second match on the card, Van Hammer versus Mikey Whipwreck. Now, I had from our listener, Dave, often frequenter of the live chats on our pre shows for pay-per-views. He sent me a link. I don't know if he tagged you in it, to go look at Eric Bischoff talking about this match on his podcast with Conrad and listen to the man squirm for 8 minutes trying to justify why Van Hammer was employed.
Because he was... what's the story they tell on Between the Sheets? He had a very easy hookup with certain people that supplied things to the backstage area at times.
Now, that is not what Bischoff goes with in this. Okay. Like, he essentially doesn't really give a reason except, look at the guy. You know, that's basically it. But it's funny because it's one of the rare occasions where, like, I would consider Conrad to be kind of a, like, he doesn't rock the boat. He likes to have the nice, you know, the banter with the people he's on the podcast with, but he doesn't like to upset them and he doesn't really call them out very strongly. Or he might, like, in a very soft way and then go, yeah, no, I see your point of things. But, like, even at the end of 8 minutes, like, where Bischoff is, like, stumbling over his words, just going, look. And even Bischoff admits, like, look, we knew he was bad. And we really should have seen how putting him against Mikey Whipwreck was a really stupid fucking idea. But basically all he had was, look at the guy. He's big and fucking jacked. What's funny is like, there's a line Bischoff has in that defense where he's just like, look, as bad as the match was, and I'll admit it was a bad match, it maybe is the best Van Hammer ever looked.
Fuck me.
It's really good. But as I said, yeah, Conrad is normally very agreeable with his co-host, but like at the very end of him stumbling around the place, Conrad is just like, he just goes, I fucking hate that you just sat there and defended Van Hammer to me.
I keep saying it to you, you should listen to Jeff Jarrett's podcast with Conrad. It's good. They actually cover stuff and you learn things.
Yeah, it's not like...
It's not like the other fucking six that he does.
Yeah, it's not like listening to Bischoff or Pritchard not pretend to not remember things.
No, Jarrett will say like, okay, yes, I had addiction issues. I may forget exact details, but here's my honest opinion.
Yeah. I should listen.
You should listen. There's some good episodes.
Yeah, with Wrestler of the Year contender Jeff Jarrett.
Future champion. He's going to win an AEW title tonight.
At least one. Van Hammer has had another makeover, by the way. So he's wearing like what looks like a spare Horace Hogan singlet, and he's got the world's most generic grunge music theme song. Very original. Like, what's so funny is that like this is taking place several years after the breakthrough of grunge into the mainstream.
What did we just talk about? Wrestling being fucking
boring. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is like, it's awful. So Mikey keeps trying to lock up with him and fails, and then the commentary get too obsessed with the idea of burying Mikey Whipwreck for having bad ideas for going for the grapple and failing, and they're so busy trying to come up with jokes about Mikey Whipwreck that they miss that the payoff to this is that he grapples with him a third time and succeeds and starts like hip tossing him and stuff like that.
I know. Why watch the match? Just bury
it. Why would you watch the match? This really sucks. I don't have a lot of notes on this. It was really, really bad. Long heat segment from Van Hammer. And even if Mikey Whipwreck is known for one thing, it's unbelievably sympathetic selling.
Mm-hmm.
And he is doing his level best here, and he cannot get this guy over as a threat.
There was actual boring chance as well.
Yeah. They're like, we don't believe you are a credible top guy. And even if you win this match, that will not change our mind. This is a horrible idea for...
But also, why should the crowd care about Mikey Whipwreck?
Yeah. Yeah, no, they shouldn't, because like all he's done, like he hasn't really had much time to shine. He's had like a handful of matches and been like...
Injured.
And been injured. Yeah. And we're closing in on his last appearance for the company as well. So he hoofs Whipwreck out and gets on top of the steps. He drops Mikey awkwardly on the rail. Mikey does a slingshot. He does a slingshot with a twist and nearly kills the two of them, trying to take him out. Hammer then grabs Mikey off the top, hits an Alabama slammer. The straps come down, Cobra Clutch slam, win. Horrible match. It got 3/4 of 1 star.
I will say, I do like the Cobra Clutch slam.
Yes.
As a maneuver. It's just very awkward setup, though.
Mm.
It's not a move you can kind of gracefully...
gracefully do, or, you know, as they always say, hit out of nowhere.
Yeah, no, it's more of a, you have to be dominant to use it.
Yeah, this is a terrible match. Next match is Buff versus Disco. Disco took so long to come out here during his entrance, we actually got to the third verse of his song, which I don't think we ever have before.
Just third verse?
Yeah, there was a whole part of his song I never heard. Buff is the first person on this whole show, so he's like the sixth, if you don't include Hugh Morris running out for interference, he's the sixth professional wrestler to appear in the show, and he's the first one who's over. Yeah, like, who actually gets a notable reaction.
Yeah, I was just going to say, to his credit, Buff is over.
Yeah.
I will say, disappointed, the top hat is gone again.
Yeah. And speaking of disappointing, this match is not very good.
It's Buff and Disco. Why would it be?
It is a fairly paint-by-numbers, wouldn't be out of place on an episode of Thunder match. They're doing nothing really interesting. It's just got a slightly louder crowd than a TV show. Now, I will say, anytime Buff is doing stuff, however dull we find it at home, the crowd are into it, which we can't have said for the previous two matches.
Mm-hmm.
But like, they die a fucking death when Disco does anything.
I do think that there was a certain element of WCW fans being desperate to have another one of their guys.
Yeah.
So they kind of attached to Buff.
Yeah, he's one of our guys. He hasn't come over from the other place. We've been with him for X amount of years. And like, there is, you know, like we said, and they're trying to like reboot him.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a genuine interest and sympathy for him there around the neck injury.
Yeah, like we always said it. Like, when he came back from the neck injury, all they had to do was feud him with Scott Steiner.
Yeah, straight in. And that's a feud that will like heat up both guys even more. Mm-hmm. There was a nice quick comeback from Buff, though, to fire up, and that gets the crowd back to life. And I will say, during that segment, Disco is feeding for him very well. Disco eats a 10 punch and then completely wilts out of the corner. Buff goes for a blockbuster, gets crotched, falls outside. In one of the most, the more you think about it, the less it makes sense, he does a last dance on the floor, which makes like no additional impact on Buff, but would surely bruise a tailbone, to say the least. Disco wants to take the count out, but Brain makes the very smart point. This is the amount of times that we've seen heels try to go for a count out. I can't remember a time where I've heard a commentator make this incredible point of logic where it's like, you shouldn't ever try to take the count out, because if they beat that count, you've allowed them 10 seconds to recover. Mm-hmm. Whereas you could have just rolled them in at 1 second and probably pinned them.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit. Like, why aren't commentators beating you over the head with this?
Wrestling logic.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's perfect. It's flawless wrestling logic. Like, it's great stuff. Steal that, somebody, please. Disco lifts a limp Buff up and he's going to hit a deep sigh, Macarena pile driver. Buff does a back body drop. Buff slugs away at him, hits a back elbow, drop kick, does the Buff strut, gets up top. I did like this finish, though, because he goes up top for the blockbuster. He lunges forward.
Yeah.
Disco shrugs out of the way, thinks he's after getting really smart and ducking Buff, and then turns back around into the blockbuster. That was good.
I do not like that they keep calling it the Buff blockbuster. Just call it the blockbuster.
Blockbuster. It's fine. We get a rap is crap recap leading us into the next match, which is the No Limit Soldiers, Conan and Rey Mysterio Jr. versus the West Texas Rednecks, Bobby Duncombe Jr., Big Bob Gum, and Kurt Hennig.
You really should stop calling him Big Bob Gum.
I will never stop. By the way, I should say the Buff versus Disco match got 2 stars from the Observer, which I think was, that's probably the first fair rating.
Mm.
I think the other two weren't harsh enough so far. So Hennig has some words for Master P. There's early flurry from the faces, sends both rednecks flying outside. Hennig talks smack at Master P, and he then gets smacked for it. Did you feel that the Master P of it all kind of detracted from the match because no one really gave a shit about the actual match? They just wanted to see Master P do stuff or show up on screen again.
I was actually going to make that point. Do you remember when Conan and Rey Mysterio were probably the second or third hottest act on the show?
Yeah, wasn't that long ago.
I was just going to say, because it wasn't that long ago.
And like, there's still definitely people love them, but I think like it is...
They are second fiddle to Master P at this point.
And it is a bit of a worry that like the company feels the need to...
Associate them
to give them the rub when they didn't really need it that long ago.
No, like we said it, like they took away Rey's mask, and Rey, for fucking unknown reasons, stayed incredibly over, and they just didn't go with him when they should have.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I'm not into the Master P fucking No Limit Soldier stuff. No. Like, I've been open about this. I don't care for this whole era of Rey and Conan.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, people don't often bring up matches from this era as being particularly memorable. So you're definitely on to something. I feel like this match was not planned out great. I feel like the heat segment for the Rednecks was too long because mm-hmm. the crowd completely...
dies
interest
mm-hmm.
and dies in the middle of it, and it takes a good bit to get them back. Rey tries to do a moonsault off the ropes, gets caught. He does a cool Rey in his like little kind of bit of shine. He does a baseball slide through the back of Bobby Duncombe Jr. and does an up kick and then hits a tag. Faces run wild. Hennig mistimes a bump into the seated position to land himself down for the Bronco Buster, or the Rough Rider, should I say. Rough Rider and Hennig while Duncombe eats a 10 punch. Then Barry Windham is just out here with work gloves and nails Conan, but Master P's crew have seen enough at this stage, Lee, and Big Swole enters into the clearing.
Yeah, Big Swole gets involved. After Windham comes out, Swole, while the referee is distracted, gets on to the apron. No, does he get on the apron? He does get on the apron.
Yeah, on the apron, yeah.
And hits Bobby Duncombe, and Rey gets the quick pin. We get a short little brawl, and then for whatever reason, the No Limit Soldiers run away to leave Rey and Conan and get their asses kicked 3-on-2.
Doesn't really make sense, does it?
Oh, it's heroes. Absolute heroes.
Yeah.
I believe the explanation they give is that security rushed them from the area.
Yeah. But this leaves, they've bailed, and it leaves the Rednecks to beat the shit out of Rey
Conan, right?
And Conan. Yeah.
I think you said Barry Windham came out in work gloves. I could be wrong about this. Maybe I'm thinking too much about this and trying to apply logic.
Yeah.
I think they were supposed to be coal miner gloves.
They were supposed to be, but they were identified on commentary as work gloves.
Were they? Okay.
Yes. I also did like an all-time top five Tony Schiavone line for me, where he says, "A lot of people shouldn't have been involved in this match, but they were."
Can you tell Tony's checked out?
Yeah. And today then tries to put over Swole. God bless him. That match was 2.25 stars, comfortably the second highest rated match in the show.
I will say, you skipped over one important part.
Oh, did I?
You forgot the Rednecks entrance.
Oh, yes.
Rap is crap is a thing.
Rap is crap is now a thing.
Yes.
And we'll probably get to talk about it on the TV, but... Are you a big rapper? Do you play Rap as Crap when you're in the car sometimes in between?
It's not on my playlist. It's not quite to American Males standard.
Okay.
But I won't say I'm a big fan. I do enjoy a little bit of Rap as Crap. speaking of Henning, did you see what Joe Henning put up on his Twitter, I believe it was?
Would you believe, Lee, I don't follow Joe Henning on Twitter.
Well, it turns out that a fourth generation of Henning is a wrestling champion.
Oh, really?
Because Joe's son Blades just won a kind of, I don't know if it was a national or state championship or something.
Yeah.
And his, do you know what his name is?
What?
Well, you know, his great grandfather was the Axe.
Yeah.
And Joe himself was the Axe Man.
Yeah.
So, of course, his son is Blade. The second Blade child of a wrestler.
Yeah. I also feel like, and he's probably only the second we know of. That feels like a very wrestler named name. Your kid.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
But I was going to say, like, I do also feel incredibly old that I can now say that I have lived through three generations of the same family's careers.
Yeah.
Which is like, well, I mean, chilling.
He's not quite a wrestler, yeah.
But... No, not quite. But like, I feel like the day is coming in the not too distant future. That hurts a little bit. Next up, speaking of hurt, Horace Hogan versus the Cat with Sonny Ono. Sonny is out with a mystery briefcase. And the real question I have is not about the mystery case, Lee. It's about who gave Horace a microphone.
We're Scott Norton. We get no explanation. This is supposed to be Cat versus Scott Norton.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We get no explanation.
The thing is, like, the storyline, like, if you're not inside baseball on it, you don't know that, like, anything about, like, wrestling being a work or stuff like that. As far as you're concerned, the storyline is, I want to fight Scott Norton. And yeah, the NWO is just saying, no.
The storyline is, Scott Norton has already kicked his ass.
Yeah, yeah.
And Kat's been calling him out for weeks. So, of course, Horace comes out on the pay-per-view.
And what's funny is Kat tries to use the same logic that Norton's using on him, where he goes, I don't want to face you. I already beat you. Yeah. Which is like exactly why Scott doesn't want to wrestle.
Unintentional comedy there.
Real bad. And speaking of real bad, Horace on the microphone.
Is Horace a face? Is he supposed to be a face?
I don't know. He says, Horace says he's trying to make a comeback, and maybe the most embarrassing 3 seconds of television I've seen in a long time, where he tries to make a joke where he goes, because Kat says to him he's going to put on his gi and beat him up and then beat everyone in this building up until he can have Scott Norton. And Horace says, you can't even beat yourself up, does not get a laugh, and then follows that up with, if you know what I mean. And then he's supposed to like do a cool guy, take his glasses off, but he ends up just mashing his palm into his face and like taking them off real fucking weird. Like, did you forget how to take glasses off your face?
Maybe his hand is just so big.
What the fuck is wrong with this guy? How bad does your hand-eye coordination have to be? Fucking hell.
He has no idea where his eyes are.
just mashing his face. Like, what is that?
Remember Big Show's t-shirt where it's just the hand?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's all Horace saw coming towards him.
He sees. Surprised he didn't flinch at his own hand coming towards him. What the fuck is this?
What was it? Did like Brett would say, like, he had uncontrollable hands in his early interviews. Yeah. That's just Horace at all times.
Yeah. Oh my god. As if it couldn't get any worse, the match starts with Horace on offense. Sonny interferes to try and help the Cat get the heat.
But do you want to say offense? So I was just offended at all of this.
It was offensive. Whips him into the barricade. Cat breaks the count. Back in, and Horace skips. I love this. Instead, Horace just like is so like bad that he doesn't even mount a comeback. It's just like you skipped forward 10 seconds on the player and he's just in control again. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't do the part where the momentum shift, they just skipped ahead. Horace picks the Cat up. Sonny's on the apron. Horace throws the Cat over the top. Then Cat puts on a shoe that Sonny gives him. Hits the standing sidekick, and still, even though he's used the illegal shoe, he needs to use the ropes for an assisted win.
Why is the shoe illegal?
I guess it's like a hard sole or something. You're asking me for logic here. You're continuity Malone. You should be figuring this out.
But I mean, we've seen wrestlers wear dress shoes.
Yeah. I don't want to tell you, buddy. Too stylish. That's why they're illegal. the contents of the case were revealed, and I know you got a feeling of dread in the pit of your stomach, because you know what era of the cat has now firmly begun, because they were a pair of shoes and a cape that said the greatest on it. So the James Brown thing is well underway.
Yeah, I believe we don't get a payoff to this until what, 2000?
Yes, I don't think so, yeah. And it'll be on a Nitro, so we won't know.
No, he shows up on the pay-per-view unadvertised.
Oh God, it is a pay-per-view. Yeah, I thought
and
it was
I think
Nitro.
He might actually be on a Nitro the next night as well.
Yes, it's Kiss that show up on Nitro, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. And Megadeth.
Yes. We get a Piper and Flair package leading into Piper and Flair. Flair is accompanied by Arn Anderson and Asia. I should have, again, the star rating for Cat versus Horace Hogan, -1 star.
Fair. I was just going to say, this Piper-Flair story. So
Bad.
They talk about how
bad.
It's bad.
It's bad. It's really bad.
It was really bad last month, but now it's worse. It's like that boil you ignore. It just gets worse and worse every time you see it.
Do you know what I was thinking about during this match? Age in the Cage was 2 years ago and Piper's still wrestling. Wait,
did you see the stat from Monday?
Oh, that Edge and Finn Balor, when they have their Hell in a Cell match at WrestleMania, will be older than Hogan and
the Age
Piper
in the Cage. Combined Age, yeah.
Yeah. And I'll be just as interested.
But at least it's outdoor, so they can't suck air too bad.
True.
So last month, this was a bad story for control of the company.
Yeah.
Now it's a really bad story for control of the company. Oh, and by the way, it's all about the Horseman family drama.
Yeah. So bad. I hate it so much. I'd like offended that it took so much of my time on this pay-per-view.
So, I need to break this down. The video package is all about how Piper took away the Horseman.
Yeah.
Not that Flair became an asshole inside of a DDP.
Yeah, yeah. No, nothing like that. Don't know what you're talking about.
And then the finish of the match is not involving the Horseman at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a young guy comes out, so the two old guys kick his ass.
Yeah.
In a way,
that completely doesn't make sense, because you have the guy that's been in a blood feud who then goes through a physical match where he's trying to hurt Flair, then just joins up with him after the match.
Yeah, so the Horseman didn't play into it at all.
Yeah.
The two guys that have been fighting for control of the company are now just aligned.
Yeah.
And people blame Vince Russo.
Yeah. It's awful. I did get a chuckle during the entrances, though, to bring it back to the start of the match, that not only is Asia in better shape than both of the people actually wrestling in this match, but maybe in better shape than almost anyone in the company.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fucking shredded. And these two guys look like wet corned beef.
I would argue that Arn is in better shape than these two guys. And
yeah, Arn's actually looking pretty trim.
Like, Arn has the fucking debilitated arm at this point.
Yeah, he does, yeah. Arn Anderson, yeah. Like, he looks great, and he hits one spot that looks better than every other spot in this match. Now, granted, it's an all-timer of a move, but, you know, that's besides the point. Piper is referred to in his entrance as WCW's troubleshooting commissioner. They also appear to say... Sorry.
Not president, the title he won last month.
Yes. They also appear to say, the commentary, that if you're the president, you have the ultimate power in the organization, which has patently not been the case the whole time.
No. Like, we've only spent 3 years putting up with the NWO.
Yeah. Piper spits at Flair. Flair goes through. This is like the typical, it's like the Butlins Flair. He's just doing like the greatest hits of like begging off and begging off and begging off. I think it looked particularly pathetic when he was begging off into a corner as Piper hit some punches that would make Shane McMahon laugh.
Speaking of comparisons to Shane McMahon, on a level, like, just how wet was Roddy Piper coming out for this match?
Oh my God, soaked. He was more wet than The Rock in a Fast and Furious movie. Honestly.
Dripping, like, just disgustingly wet.
Disgusting, yes. Flair begs off and begs off. Piper bites his head. Flair mule kicks him down low behind Randy Anderson for the heat. Flair throws out Piper. The ref is distracted as Arn lays into Piper on the outside. In a spot that I'm sure the whole world wanted to see in 1999, Piper pulls out Ric Flair's arse and goes for a roll-up. Why? Double A tries to interfere again, but he gets taken out by Piper. Piper does the slowest and most pathetic sunset flip I've ever seen in my life back into the ring. Piper locks in the sleeper, and he's, you can tell how bloated he is. This is the loosest sleeper I've ever seen in my life. The ref gets distracted by Arn. Flair pulls out the nooks and belts Piper. Takes too long to make a cover. Piper kicks out. Figure four is in, and Arn is helping with the leverage. The crowd goes crazy then as Buff comes out and interferes like a fucking idiot. Like, surely it would be to his benefit. Like, even though him and, like, Piper don't really respect each other, surely it would be to his interest not to have Flair in charge. And he comes out and causes a disqualification. Bell rings, and then Piper just randomly hits Buff Bagwell.
Yep.
Arn Anderson hits a spine buster. A sick ass spine buster.
Great spine buster.
It's just unbelievable every time out of the gate. Arn and Flair then hold Buff down while Piper whips him with a strap. I was just like, what the fuck?
Where'd the strap come from?
It was just like, he just comes into the ring with it. I don't know where he got it. Was it around his kilt? I don't know.
Oh, possibly. Yeah, that's a good show.
They just beat so him down.
So dumb.
Keeps beating him down after Flair leaves. It makes, like, whatever about the, like, him turning on Buff, you know, makes a little bit of sense because they've not been seeing eye to eye. But in terms of him joining up with Flair, it makes absolutely no sense. And you could tell by the crowd reaction, no one wanted to see it. Dog shit.
What I will say is I'm glad that Flair and Piper won't be wrestling each other anymore.
Yeah.
Because, like, look, they're fucking two legends and all the greats and whatever you want to say about them. But, like, this was slow. Like, embarrassing.
It was. Do you know what it was? I wouldn't even use slow as the word to describe it. I'd say sad.
That's probably a better description of it. It deals, you watch it and you're like, why are they being put in this position? Like, first of all.
And, like, we know that, like, Flair would go on to still have a few more pretty good matches in his career.
Right? Yeah. Now, look, he would also be in a lot better shape than he is at this point.
When do you think the last time these guys were in the same match was?
2006.
Hey, you remember their tag team title run?
Yes, and that's how Piper found out he had cancer.
Yeah. Can you tell me, for trivia's sake, who did they beat for the WWE tag team titles, and who did they drop them to?
Spirit Squad they beat.
Yes.
Because they had done the 5v5 at Survivor Series the night before, and then they won the tag titles on Raw.
Yeah.
With all the legends, I believe, at ringside. And then they dropped them to who did they drop them to? God. Was it the Clones?
It was Rated RKO.
Yeah, of course. Yes, because they got concertoed and written off.
Yeah.
And because Piper did the tag title match. And then I think he had to do, like, some kind of physical, and that's when the doctor found the problems that he had. But I think it was his colon, was it?
Yeah. You will be pleased to also know that these two guys, it does seem like they form a tag team, and we're going to have to deal with that for a while. By the end of this month, they never appear in the same ring together in a match in WCW. Good. This tag team literally lasts till... This is the... What is it? This is the 13th, I think it is, I said. The 13th of June this takes place in. The last time they're in a match together is the 21st.
Yeah.
So it's not this Nitro. It's the Nitro after. They do wrestle twice on that Nitro as a tag team.
We're not watching it.
No, Jesus, no. Imagine you're going to, it's in the Superdome in New Orleans. Imagine paying to go to Superdome Nitro and you get, right, listen to these two matches.
I will say getting those two wrestling twice is more offensive than being called the Silver Dome multiple times.
Yeah, you get Buff Bagwell versus Ric Flair and Roddy Piper in a handicap match that goes to a no contest, which leads, I assume, directly into Ric Flair and Roddy Piper versus Buff Bagwell and Dean Malenko. And then that's your lot. They do... they do have a match the following night on Nitro after this. They have a six-man tag match. Actually, it's not. It's a 5-on-3 handicap match where it's Buff Bagwell, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko. Oh, sorry, no, 5-on-4. Buff Bagwell, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, and Perry Saturn against Ric Flair, Roddy Piper, and the Jersey Triad. I imagine it's Bam Bam on the ring apron, so it might be an 8-man.
That's a much better version of the Revolution.
Yeah. Oh, at least we're not subjected to it for very long. Where was I? Yeah, let's just fucking leave this dog shit. It got a dud rating from Dave. And like what it takes for Dave Meltzer to give Ric Flair a dud.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think there's too many of those in the Dave history.
You want to talk about dog shit? This next match has quite literal dog shit.
So we get a video for Sting and Rick Steiner, and this is an all-time bad.
I love this because the intro makes very clear this is a non-title match.
Yeah.
Because the TV title does not fucking matter, Dave.
Yeah. It's also so funny to me that Scott Steiner doesn't have a match on pay-per-view.
US champ Scott Steiner.
Yeah. One of the most like reviled heels in the whole company. No, sorry, we got nothing for you tonight, mate. Well, we do have something for you, but it ain't a match. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Instead, your undercard, less talented brother can be on pay-per-view.
You're a dog handler.
Yeah.
During Sting's entrance, we see somebody with a Sting sign who tried to draw a bat on the sign, but it absolutely came out looking like a dildo. Keep an eye out for that if you're looking back at the pay-per-view.
For fuck's sake. Somebody's going to post that in the fucking Discord now, watch.
I've actually been watching Community a lot recently again, and I was roaring laughing the other night at a line where Chevy Chase comes into Alison Brie's apartment and he's like... it was like two questions. Why are you living in an apartment above Dildopolis? And two, when did they open a second location?
Do you know what? I've never watched Community. I really should.
Oh, Lee, you'd love Community. It's so good. So funny. Anyway, big dumb brawl early. Raking Sting's eyes over the ropes and such. They go outside. Sting tries to do a splash into the barricade, but he gets nothing but fence. Pile driver on the floor, back in. Big release German from Rick. Does a bit of ground and pound. I would say Sting's face paint is rubbed off his head in record time in this match.
Well, see, there's a reason for that.
Because he's literally being rubbed into the mat.
Well, that doesn't help the matter, but it's also the fact that Sting must have been sharing a locker room with Roddy Piper because he is also incredibly wet coming
just
out.
Just the AC was turned off.
His hair is like slicked back, which you don't see very often with Stinger. So I'm guessing like that the whole saturation just kind of took away the face paint.
The humidity backstage. Mm. Beating him and beating him till Sting just decides to stop selling. gets his knees up to the crotch. Two Stinger splashes and a deathlock attempt, but there's a rope break. Sting then brings Rick. You knew it was like bullshit alert because Sting takes Rick out of the ring and he leads him backstage, but it's through one specific curtain to the side of the stage. And I knew some bullshit was up, but I didn't realize how quickly and how bad it would be.
The camera cuts here are fucking all timer.
Do you want to describe what we saw?
Remember Kennel from Hell?
Imagine that, but worse.
I was just going to say, because this is a lot fucking worse.
Mm.
Like, so we get they fight backstage, and the camera very obviously get a cut because they're standing
it's,
around. Like
this is a pre-record. Like,
yeah,
clearly.
It's like very clearly pre-recorded. And randomly, Tank Abbott and Rick Steiner are backstage.
Yeah.
So Tank gets physically involved while Scott Steiner just stands there looking.
Yeah. And then does like weird elaborate hand signal.
Yeah. And we see two Dobermans charging at Sting, who now has his arm wrapped.
A large dog appears. Now, I did actually rewind, like, where did he get the rag from? So Tank Abbott has a towel around his neck when he attacks Sting. So I think that's how they tried to logic the towel into proceedings.
Oh, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Sting all of a sudden has a towel wrapped around him, which is then on his arm. And so one dog is kind of gently licking at his leg while the other is jumping at his chest.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's like they do the spot where it's like, oh my God, he's biting Sting's hand. But you can see this like 2-inch thick towel wrapped around, like... Not a hope.
And then we get another cutscene.
Yeah.
As for whatever reason, Scott Steiner is now 50 meters away.
He teleports
with what I can only imagine is the biggest dog on television.
Yeah.
Which I believe was
a large dog appeared.
Yeah. It's a Shivani screams, oh my God, that's an Alsatian.
Something, says, yeah, I think it was
something,
yeah.
Whatever it is, he shouts, and then we see this dog charging at Sting, and then we get a cutscene to Doug Dillinger and the boys running down a corridor.
I really want someone to take that and either gif it or Baywatch theme song.
No, do you know what it needs to be?
What?
Into the DX intro.
Oh yes. Yes. Yes.
So we cut to Dillinger and the boys running down a corridor from apparently miles away.
It's, you know what it is? It's the bit from the Holy Grail where John Cleese is like running and it cuts and then it cuts back and he's still the same distance away.
And I think it's Tony or Tanae is shouting that, oh my God, we can't show you what's going on. It's so violent and horrible.
Enormous bullshit chants from the crowd.
Yeah,
the Steiners drag Mickey J out to the ring. Scott says,
"Poor Mickey J."
Scott says, "And think of this logic, or sorry, it's Rick said it. It's false count anywhere. Oh no, Scott says it.
It's Scott. Yeah, Scott cuts
it's
an
false
awful
count anywhere, and Rick beat him up, so he wins 1-2-3. Right?
Yeah. So apparently, the Steiners realized that the cameras weren't showing what was happening.
Yeah."
So even though they were backstage attacking a man with a dog, they also realized what was being broadcast on pay-per-view.
Because he says they couldn't show it because WCW were trying to protect their franchise. Sorry, the franchise is gone, lads.
Or is he on his way?
Rick says he showed Sting tonight what the dog is all about. And I said the promo is as terrible as Scott's fucking baseball shirt.
Promo is fucking awful.
The promo is bad. Scott's baseball Big Papa Pump spray paint shirt is terrible. Scott buried, and this is another thing that I like this era of WCW, I hate so much. They bury the company.
Mm-hmm.
They say WCW sucks and they can all bow down to the Steiners. And then just to try and get an additional level of booing, Rick calls Baltimore the shittiest town in America, which, you know, that cheap heat when you're really desperate. This got the other -1 star rating, one of the all-time worst finishes I've ever seen in this company, and that covers some ground. And it's going to be topped for worst finish ever very rapidly as we progress through 99 and 2000.
Why? I just don't understand why this isn't talked about more as like just awful WCW. Yeah.
Next up, we have World Tag Team title match as Chris Benoit and Perry Saturn defend against the Triad. Remember, they did the title switch on the go-home show.
Yeah. Okay.
Idiots.
I will say, when they laid out the history of the Triad in the video package before this, it actually all made sense. Whatever way they chopped it up, I thought they did a very good job of kind of...
I,
putting together the multiple storylines.
This is the one part of the show that seems to come for a parallel universe where Great American Bash 99 was good, because it had a video package that explained the storyline very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And then it led into the only quote unquote good match on the whole show.
And
it wasn't great.
Yeah, I was just going to say that was going to be my hot take on this. This is wrestlers I enjoy having a match that I really didn't like.
Okay, so maybe you lead on this match then. You didn't like it.
I didn't like it. I wanted to like it. It's like, yeah, like I said, it's four of my favorite people in the company at the moment. Yeah. I very much enjoy this kind of DDP, like proper heel character. Mm. I'm all about fucking murder and all, whatever. The babyface Chris Benoit in WCW was definitely something they should have got behind.
Yeah.
Perry Saturn, we've fucking talked about.
They couldn't have gotten behind him any later in his WCW mm-hmm. run than they did.
Like Perry Saturn,
you want the belt? Oh, I'm heading off, mate, actually.
Yeah, we're sick of saying how good Perry Saturn is at this point. But yeah, I don't know. This just didn't work for me. I don't know. I think maybe I was just beaten down from the show.
Yeah, when I say it was the best match on the show, like, I suppose I should be more specific and say, like, what it is, it's a pretty decent TV match. Like, it gets, Dave gives it 3.5 stars.
I think that's very generous.
Yeah, I think it's a 3-star, gentleman's 3. Mm. Like, I had absolute, like, it was grand, but it was just grand. Like, it's going nowhere near, like, where we always will, like, if it's a proper exceptional match, we'll recommend it on the show for people to go back and watch. It's not nearly in that territory, but at least it's like, if you've paid and you're stuck in the building, you finally got something that resembles professional wrestling on the show after 2+ hours.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where it's not enough to salvage the show for me.
And it is one where I'm like, I'm not going to get it. This is, I think, the only one on the show where I'm not really going to get into the spot by spot, because it is like just a, like, it's a paint by numbers type of job now. And that, when it's these four guys, paint by numbers is good, you know, but there's nothing in this match you haven't seen before. And there's nothing you wouldn't have predicted. Like, you know, did we get Dean coming out at the end leading into the finish?
I will say the finishing sequence was good, because they go to the finish that they used on the TV on Thunder, where they won the titles.
Yes.
The double, like, the splashes off the corner.
The splash from one corner, the headbutt from the other.
And I did like that DDP had obviously learned from Thunder and caught Saturn with the diamond cutter.
Yeah, which did look cool.
And that's when Malenko comes out, we get the kind of distraction, and Bammer comes in, and they get the diamond cutter and greetings simultaneously,
which I have dubbed the greetings cutter.
Ooh, I went up with diamond greetings.
Diamond. Oh, okay, well, let's go diamond greetings. I like that.
They get that on Saturn, and DDP puts Canyon into the cover for the pin and the win. Yeah. To me, that was the best part, was the finish.
Yeah. Oh, but then it was just fine.
It was just, yeah, it was okay.
I had a great Tony line I wrote down here just at the end as it goes off, where he goes, "That's all we need. Another obnoxious champion."
Tony's so pissed off.
Savage. Savage. Absolutely catty on this show, he is.
I was going to say, is that a shot at Kevin Nash?
Oh, yeah, could well be.
Like, Kevin Nash is the booker at this point, and Tony's been fucking taking shots all night.
Yeah, and we know that, like, Kevin Nash is hardly on the headset at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Main event video. On closer inspection of that stealth contortionist video, where he comes out with the gym bag to the ring, and he's, you know, challenging Savage to come out there, and he says, "I have my ring gear and I'll wrestle you tonight." So, like, the implication was that Nash didn't get dressed. He just brought his gear bag out to the ring in a gym bag and was willing to, like, change in the ring.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, why not? Give the crowd what they want, eh?
Well, I mean, he would years later in Magic Mike, so.
Yeah. Oh, there was actually a Magic Mike moment. I can't remember if I actually wrote it down here.
Was he icing his knee like he does in the
There was
of...
a bit. I can't remember if it's during the match. No, I actually think it's in the video package where he's covered in glitter. I was like, oh, here's the Magic Mike audition tape.
All I remember from
It is in the match. It is in the match because it's after the, I think it's when Medusa comes in, it's glitter off her outfit that rubs off on him. So when he takes down the straps, you see all the glitter.
I was going to say, I just remember Kevin Nash and Magic Mike just icing his knee consistently.
Yeah. This, by the way, this main event match, Kevin Nash versus Randy Savage with Gorgeous George, Medusa, and Miss Madness is the other negative one star. Just three negative one star matches on this show.
I actually didn't hate this match.
Do you know who's putting in the most amount of work on this show?
Medusa.
No, it's the entire bottle of Just for Men that Buffer is Buffer putting in there.
Okay, I wasn't going to bring it up, but my God.
I brought it right up.
I just have fucking Buffer with his totally real hair color.
Who is he kidding? Who is he kidding? Nash apparently has ignore the pain courage.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, whatever. You just talk about knees. How's me think about knees? Tanae confirms that the
elbow is no longer banned.
Which I got to think, Mr. Bookerman only did that because he wants to take the elbow and kick out.
It's the all.
You tell me.
I can't wait to kick out your finish, brother.
You tell me that wasn't why he did it, and I will show you a liar.
I will forever say this on the show.
Mm-hmm.
The entrance of Macho Man with his new music and the three women is fucking fantastic.
It's such a shame he can't go.
It's just such a shame that, one, he looks fucking old at this point, and that he is totally washed.
Yeah. So, like, beyond the wash.
It's such a good update to the Macho Man character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they all work, like I say, Macho is washed. He is working hard, I think. It's just he's not physically able. And the women, I have to say, all three of them are putting in a serious shift every time they're on screen.
Everyone except Kevin Nash is trying in this match. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's just they got nothing.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because I think if something like this was done 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
And Savage had this kind of like just fucking awesome fucking stable of women with him, he would have stood out even more.
Yeah.
Away from the NWO.
It's a real fucking shame. It's a real fucking shame. I don't know, like, do you want to go into, like, I think that the elbow thing is really funny because, like, they unbanned the elbow, which is really funny because, like, they totally weren't, it didn't matter. Like, he was still doing the elbow the entire time.
Yeah, it hadn't mattered in the whole build-up.
Yeah.
I did like that the setup for the elbow, though, was Molly, Nora, Miss Madness, hitting a missile dropkick.
Yeah. Again, in the ball game, the second time she's done that.
And she then eats a fucking snake eyes later on in the ball game. Like,
yeah.
Fucking, like I say, the women work incredibly hard.
Yeah. But I'm not really, because it is just the women's bit, which is worth mentioning, which we have done. There's the Nash comeback, which is just the ultimate in five moves of doom, like big boot, snake eyes, straps down. Rah.
Yeah, and he doesn't even hit the snake eyes and Savage. It's just the one on Miss Madness.
He swats off the women. But what we really want to talk about, Lee, and again, I will give the front seat to you because this is something you've been excited for.
Yeah.
For so long. One of the largest men appears.
The largest man of largest men appears. Yeah.
The master and ruler of the universe.
He just strolls into the ring and you look at the crowd. The crowd go fucking bananas for Sid.
Yeah.
Because I don't care what type of wrestling fan you are. If you don't pop for Sid, you can fuck right off.
Yeah. But he's just like, wrestling, he's just a freaky looking individual. Like, you've got to react to that.
Wrestling isn't for you if you don't pop for Sid. I don't care.
Yeah.
He just walks into the ring and fucking plants Nash with a big boot. Straight in, big boot.
Look, hits him with his two moves. Like, hits him with the same two moves Nash uses. Big boot, power bomb. Like,
That's what I mean. He doesn't use the chokeslam. Oh no, Sid just walks in. Fucking, I'm powerbombing you. That's it. Yeah.
It's fucking Sid like. And also the his third move, which is to do Sid vicious faces.
I will say he's totally miscast as a heel.
Yeah. The staring maniacally as he's chewing through his own jaw.
I am all here for babyface Sid in WCW. I can't wait. I'm so glad he's here.
What's funny is as we go off the air, Tony says, maybe Sid drove the Hummer. And the other guys are like, that makes sense. And then Tony cautions them. Yes, it does make sense. But sometimes here, you have to throw logic out the window. And never has a truer word been said than World Championship Wrestling.
He's totally burying Ash. Like thank this whole
you,
night.
Thank you, as we go off the air, Anthony Schiavone.
Yeah, I'm sure if you asked him now, like he would say, yeah, he was totally burying fucking Ash.
And I wonder is that there's been like this big, they're everyone's talking about it online now about how like Nash has sworn off watching AEW now. And I wonder if it was part of his bad memories of Schiavone digging him on the air.
Nash going backstage and fucking Mike Graham running up going, oh, Schiavone's buried you again, brother.
Yeah. So that's the end of Great American Bash. Lee, it won't come as a galloping shock to anybody when you say it, but give your overall impressions of the show, followed by your winners and losers, please.
Sid.
Does your thought on the show is Sid?
No, what more do I need to say? Look, it's a fucking piss poor effort of a show. Like, Jed, like...
Three negative one-star matches and a dud.
Yeah, whatever you think of Meltzer's ratings, he wasn't giving out negative ratings in 99 unless he had to.
Yeah. I think it was like, unless he was watching WCW.
really, I do think this is the worst pay-per-view we've had since starting the weekly shows in 98.
It definitely wasn't boring. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've actually struggled to get through a couple of pay-per-views more.
Yeah. Boring is a different kind of bad.
It was bad in a way that we could talk about and that I could watch with my jaw on the floor. It wasn't bad in a way where I was just like, fucking hell, when will this end?
Do you know how this was the kind of bad where I just didn't take many notes because, like, what was there to take note of?
Yeah, truly.
And that's, like, truly bad. Like, it's not... Like you say, boring is one thing. Boring is, fucking, I'm not into this.
Yeah.
But, like, there was people that were over on this show and it was still just bad.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The biggest winner is...
Sid.
Sid is here.
The biggest winner is you because Sid's here.
Yes. I'll put over the three women again. They were fucking incredible. And, like, losers, like, fucking Sting. Like, the man was world champion a month ago.
Yeah, he was world champion. Like, imagine putting Sting in a match that gets minus one star.
Imagine putting Sting in a match where he gets mauled by dogs to end the match. Like, the man gets set fire to and falls off a Titantron, and it might not be the worst thing that ever happened to him.
Yeah. Oh, like, the man got buckle bombed into retirement by Seth Rollins, and I'd say he'd still rather do that again than be involved in this.
Yeah, like, people need to remember this when Darby Allin pins him clean.
Yeah.
Sting got mauled by dogs and lost. So whatever about fucking Tony Khan
just
and your fucking...
Just that sentence, Sting got mauled by dogs. Like, that's a thing we saw. And we're so beaten down by WCW already. We watch it, we're like, yeah, well, yeah, okay.
So, first of all, Sting got attacked by Tank Abbott and then got mauled by dogs. The UFC fighter Steiners weren't enough.
Who do you think worked more snug? The Steiners, the dogs, or Tank Abbott? Answers on a postcard.
Oh, fuck me. Like,
I'd say that the actual dogs were the lightest workers.
They're probably the ones Sting enjoyed working with the most.
He had the best conversation with.
Probably more than fucking intelligent.
Oh man.
It's just fucking, it was black. I'm glad we won't have to see Ric Flair and Roddy Piper anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not into fucking the filthy animals. or the No Limit Soldiers.
We're into the Filthy Animals.
I'm not into Buff as a fucking baby.
Have
face.
A feel. That's enough. I can't wait to get to that.
I'm not into Brian now. Like, there's just so much on the show I'm not interested in.
Well, your finish counter brought to you by Ludwig Borga gives us 9 matches with 3 clean finishes, 2 DQs, 3 matches with interference leading directly to a finish, and 1 other in brackets non-finish, aka dog mauling. and I hope
hang on. Scott Hall walked out on a match involving Steve Dahl and a mauler. And that mauler might not be the worst mauling that's ever happened on WCW.
I also say, even though I watched a lot of Dying Days WCW, I was about to say the line, I hope this is the only dog mauling in the rest of WCW history, but I actually can't be 100% sure. I actually can't rule it out if there's another dog mauling I've suppressed.
Suppressed a dog?
Yeah. If this was a normal episode with a title, I think Days of Thunder episode blank, I've suppressed a dog mauling is definitely an episode title.
That's like a fucking... Do you know what that is? That's an Always Sunny episode name. The gang gets dog mauled.
The gang suppresses a dog maul. Yeah.
Or Charlie gets dog mauled or something.
Anyway, this show sucked. Thanks for listening, everyone.
I can't wait for Thunder.
Yeah. We'll see all in 1 week on patreon.com/WCW Thunderpod, in 2 weeks on the Voices of Wrestling feed. Thanks for listening. Please share with us your thoughts on suffering through the show in the Voices of Wrestling Discord on our channel or with us on Twitter at WCW Thunderpod.
And hey, if you don't want to subscribe to patreon.com/WCW Thunderpod,
you should.
But if you don't want to, you can always just give us whatever money you have lying around on the VOW pledge page.
Yes.
Just find our show and click the link.
Yeah, I think it's voicesofwrestling.com/donate, is it, or something?
Donate,
like that?
that's the one. It's also in our link tree.
We're literally the first show on that list. Alphabetical order is coming to bear.
And also the first show in your heart.
Yes, first show. Oh, yes, first in your heart. Sorry, Joe and Rich. Anyway. Night, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to this, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye bye. Thanks everyone for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder was produced by Lee Malone and edited by me, Dave Ryan. To keep up to date with the show and find all the ways to listen to us, you can follow us on Twitter at WCW Thunderpod or click the Linktree link in our Twitter bio or in the show notes. I am at The Day to Dave on Twitter and Lee is at Malone_713. Days of Thunder is a part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Follow the VOW network anywhere good podcasts are sold for more fine podcasts than you can shake a stick at. Thanks.
Music, it's not just part of our daily lives, it's part of our wrestling fandom as well, and it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests, fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.